Well, tell us, you know, Hall of Fame Day is a really special Monday in Toronto. And 13 years ago, you were inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. I mean, what are your memories of that night? You were so freshly removed from playing in your final game. 5-6 months later, you're in the Hall. I mean, look, Mark Howe had to wait until he's 56. It doesn't happen overnight for a lot of guys.
Well, listen, first of all, you know, I think that as kids, it's such a thrill and an honor to get an opportunity, if you're in the area, to sort of venture through the Hall of Fame. And I was no different than any other child. I could just walk through for hours and stare at all the different stuff that was in the Hall of Fame, from equipment to trophies to players. And that was always, for me, a special time. But I think when you're a youngster, you know, your dream is to make the NHL and your dream is to win the Stanley Cup. I don't think we think as kids, well, one day I'm going to be in the Hall of Fame. That's just not on our mindset. So once you play your career and if things go well and you play with obviously great players and surrounded by good teams, there's those opportunities. And for us in Edmonton, we're very fortunate to play with so many Hall of Famers, so many great players. And, you know, the Hall of Fame day itself is a day and a weekend to sort of celebrate not only what you did in your career, but the people who are around you that were so supportive, from parents and family members to coaches when you were a youngster in minor hockey, all the way through to, obviously, the National Hockey League. So it's just really a stamp on your career and a great thrill for any player that gets that opportunity to go into the Hall of Fame.
Wayne Gretzky, our guest. And I think life's like that. Eh? You think, what kind of a job am I doing right now? What kind of parent am I being? And it's only, you can only look back on it when it's all over. Because it's just your whole career, no matter what you do, is so full of highs and lows, ebbs and flows. And there's no way to sort of, like you said, analyze it or evaluate. You know when you think you're doing well, but until it's all over, there's no way to really put a bow on it and say, yeah, this is what it was.
Yeah, and that's for sure. And you know, you're sort of at the hands of a committee who makes that decision. Listen, there's a lot of really good players that are sort of right on the fence of maybe being an opportunity to be in the Hall of Fame that unfortunately don't get in. So it's tough to get into the Hall of Fame. It's not an easy thing to do. And boy, we were lucky. We had a really good coach in Edmonton, and Glenn Sather, and he really pushed players. And he often would tell guys that even at a young age of 22, 23, you know, listen, I'm pushing you because I really believe one day you'll be a Hall of Famer. But the players themselves never think that way. It's just something that's not in our mindset. It's, as you said, it's sort of you play your games, and there's a lot of peaks and valleys throughout your career. And then once it's over, you know, then other people sort of assess to who can has earned the right to be in the Hall of Fame, and you're sort of in the hands of somebody else's decision.
Joe Sakic is a Hall of Famer now, Wayne. When you think about him both on and off the ice, what was it about him that really made him special?
Well, listen, I really believe that there's always this guideline of how hockey is sort of played in different parts of the country. And I don't think it's any secret that, like, when I grew up, the Quebec League was known to be this offensive sort of minded league where, you know, 180, 190 points seemed to be what the best players put up. And then you had the Ontario League that sort of had this image of being more of a two-way game. There was a lot of imagination and creativity in the game. And then at that time, the Western League sort of had this image of being sort of a big, tough, physical game. And if you could play in the Western League, you had a really good chance or opportunity to play in the NHL. And I think the influence of guys in Calgary and Edmonton, guys like Lanny McDonald and Hackenlube and Al McGuinness, and guys in Edmonton like Coffey and Messier, really was an influence to Western Canada. And guys like Joe Sakic were sort of the first breed of guys that come through there that were a little bit more an Ontario-style hockey player. And, you know, when Joe came out of junior hockey, he was one of those guys. And, you know, he just was a quiet leader, and he was obviously a creative hockey player with a great imagination. And there's no question one of the great players that ever played the game. And, you know, he was a champion, whether it be Stanley Cup, World Cup, Olympic gold. He was just a special guy that really pressure didn't bother him. The bigger the game, the better he seemed to play, and the more excited and revved up his he seemed to be, and his game would always go to another level. So I don't think there's any question. He's very, very deserving of being in the Hall of Fame.
There's two games I remember, Wayne, that are related to you and Matt Sundin that I think about. They're both international and both him playing for Sweden. One was the semifinal in 96. I felt like he carried them in that World Cup and almost won the game single-handedly a few different times. It went to overtime. And then there was obviously the game in Salt Lake where he also, right from the get-go, that Friday night against your Canadian team that you put together, put them on his back. And you probably thought right after that game, Sweden's for real. And Matt Sundin just thrived internationally. He was so good at the international game.
Well, we knew going into the Olympic Games that, first of all, the Americans were going to be tough because they actually had such a good team. And being on U.S. soil and being in Salt Lake City, we knew that was going to make them an even better team. And, you know, coming from 98 Nagano, they didn't have a great tournament. And we knew that they had a lot of pride on that team with guys like Leach and guys like Chelios. That they and Richter, they were just going to be a very good team, and they had a great tournament. But the matchup we were really scared of, we for whatever reason, our team didn't seem to match up great against the Swedes. And as you said, Mats was the cornerstone of that team, and he was the leader of that group. And they, you know, they beat us handily, as you said, in game one. I think it was 5-1. And the score was probably flattering, 5-1. It was probably more lopsided than the score even indicated. But Mats was obviously the best player on the ice in that game. And we there's no question, we caught a break when they got beat in the quarterfinal game. Yeah. A fluky goal beat them. And, you know, otherwise we would have had a tough matchup. But, you know, things happen for a reason. But, you know, listen, I had an opportunity over the years to get to know Mats and watch Mats. And as people have said throughout this whole campaign of him getting the Hall of Fame, it's tough to play in Toronto, and you got to be a special person, and he was. He played every night, he played hard every shift, and he was a tremendous leader of that team, and he had some great years, and that team had some great years while he was the captain there.
Wayne Gretzky, kind enough to join us on Brady and Lang on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And quick thoughts on Pavel, obviously, and Adam Oates, who I don't think you got to play a lot internationally with Adam Oates, because I'll tell you, it was so hard to make Team Canada in 1987 or 1991. He was on a couple of those plucky Red Wings teams that you had to beat out with Edmonton a couple of occasions in 87 and 88. But he was behind Steve Yzerman. He was behind Sergei Fedorov. He did need to go probably somewhere else to thrive and become the superstar that he became.
Yeah, everything happens for a reason. As you say, he was there was a loophole in the agreement, and he came out as an unrestricted free agent, and Detroit wooed him, and he signed a deal there. And I think that I look at it two ways. One, he as you said, he's playing behind Yzerman and Fedorov, and I think at that time even Keith Primeau. So
yeah.
It was tough for him to get a lot of ice time. But in saying that, you also learn from those guys. And, you know, Adam Oates is a very, very intelligent man, and that's why he's going to go on to be a successful coach, is because he studies the game and he worked at his game and he worked at his craft very diligently. And, you know, you can't get a better group of three centermen who play probably three different styles of game. But he probably incorporated a little bit of each one of those guys. And when they gave him that opportunity to move to St. Louis, he took full advantage of that. And, you know, listen, the two most prolific or purest goal scorers I ever saw in my career were Mike Bossy and Brett Hull. And Brett Hull would be the first guy to sit here and tell you that Adams Oates was a big part of why he was successful. Adam had the ability to understand and realize that he was going to be the guy that was going to be the playmaker, and each and every time he got an opportunity to get the puck to Brett Hull, that there was a great chance and a great opportunity for the puck to go in the net. So right from day one, they clicked together. They worked well together. A lot like Jerry Curry and myself. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know each other, but the first day you get on the ice with each other, for whatever reason, you just think the game the same way, and that was the way Brett and Adam were throughout their whole time together in St. Louis. And then, you know, for Adam, I think he really put a stamp on his career with, you know, he played with Cam Neely, and Cam was arguably one of the best power forwards that ever played the game. But he was able to combine that power with some finesse. And when he had Adam as his centerman to go on to score 50 goals, it's pretty solid for a guy who was known as a power forward. So Adam was, is without question, deserving of going into the Hall of Fame.
Wayne, is it an overstatement to say that in some ways Pavel Bure helped save and revive the Canucks franchise when he arrived in Vancouver?
Yeah, and I think one of the things about Pavel that is really intriguing to me, and sometimes you forget about it, but, you know, there was a time there in the late 80s and early 90s where Vancouver as a franchise were struggling in the sense that they weren't winning a lot and the crowds and attendance was down a little bit. They signed Pavel, who probably had one of the great nicknames in hockey and well-deserved nickname in the Russian Rocket, and he electrified the entire city and province of British Columbia. You know, with what he was able to do on the ice, he was just a marvel to watch. He did everything at a high speed, at a high tempo. And it's funny how things are. In 1981, I went to Russia and did a workout a video with Vladislav Tretiak comparing the upbringing of Canadian and North American hockey players to that of the Soviet players at the time. And we were in the Red Army Arena, and one of the kids on the ice, a 10-year-old kid who was flying around, Tretiak said, "Keep your eye on this kid," and that went on to be Pavel Bure. So we all know how good he was and what he did to contribute to the game of hockey. But I think lost a little bit in that shuffle is a lot like what Brett Hull did in St. Louis and what Mario did in Pittsburgh. He was able to rejuvenate a city and put hockey back on the map, and he definitely excited the fans of the Vancouver Canucks.
The great Wayne Gretzky joining us on Brady and Lang. You know, the last two labor stoppages, you were a player for half a season in 94-95. You were on the ownership side the last time this took place before you went behind the bench. And now, for right now, you're neither. Do you feel any differently watching this, knowing how disappointing it is for, let's face it, for all parties? Yeah. There are owners that want to get teams on the ice. There are players that certainly want to play. And then there's the rest of us, right? You, me, and everybody else that that want the sport back.
Yeah. I'm definitely with you, me, and everybody else right now. I'm sort of on the outside looking in, and you guys probably know more or follow it even closer than I do. I just feel bad for not only the players and the owners and the organizations and the people who work in the arenas, from, you know, the parking lot attendants to the concession people, but to the everyday fan. We want to see hockey. It's frustrating. I know here in California it's probably a little bit more frustrating here than anywhere else, in the sense that, you know, they want to see the banner raised. They want to have that day where they celebrate the fact that they were the Stanley Cup champions of the previous year. And unfortunately, we got a work stoppage. And, you know, I've said for a couple months now, and I have no reason to know other than sort of guessing like everybody else is doing, but my gut still tells me that over the next 6 weeks, I think that they will get a deal done. And I think there's too many people that want to play, and I still see hockey being played come January for, you know, a 40 or 50 game schedule. So let's all try to be positive, and let's hope that the two sides can come to an agreement where hockey will be back on the sports pages and not in the business pages, because as sports fans and as hockey fans, that's what we all want, and we want to watch the game of hockey.
Now, Wayne, as someone who calls Los Angeles home now, are you worried at all about the Kings losing some momentum and steam after winning the Stanley Cup last June?
Well, listen, you know, as I said, the excitement level here because of raising the banner is obviously extremely high. But the other side of it, as you said, this area like San Jose and Phoenix and Dallas and places like that is a little bit different than that of Edmonton, Calgary, and Toronto, where, you know, each and every day, whether it's June, July, or November, December, hockey is on the front pages. So here we're always fighting to get that equality and sort of try to be as marketable as the USC Trojans or the UCLA Bruins or the LA Lakers or Clippers. And, you know, it's always a concern. You know, people are human, and people get upset and disappointed, and you obviously come to a point where you will lose some fans. But You know, listen, I said from day one that the two greatest players ever played the game, Gordie Howe and Bobby Orr, there's no one person that's bigger than the game. The game survives because it's an incredible game, and unfortunately we're going to go through some pains here, but hopefully a lot of those fans will come back, and hopefully over the next 5 to 10 years we gain more fans who enjoy our game and love the sport. But you know, it's tough right now. Nobody likes to see a work stoppage. Nobody's happy about a work stoppage. And, you know, fans, you know, especially in this day and age, fans look to it as an entertainment. They look at it as, you know, I can put my troubles aside for 2 hours and go enjoy and watch a hockey game. And unfortunately, right now, you can't do that. So hopefully, cooler heads will prevail here, and over the next 4 to 6 weeks, they can get a deal that gets done and both sides say, all right, let's move forward here and get back on track and try to win back our old fans, and let's try to make some new fans.